Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Deepest Lore. If you take a sip of your afternoon tea, maybe we can do a bit like Scott Adams and take the simultaneous sip. Is that a copyright infringement? I don't know, but we can all take a sip of our afternoon tea. And this works quite well, of course, because in America, it's the morning or the very early morning. So if you're an American watching this, you can take a sip of your morning coffee instead. So today, I'm on my own. Next week, we'll be talking Batman again with Mark. In 2 weeks' time, we'll be talking about modern art again, I think, with possibly Mr. D and with Benjamin Rood. But today I'm going to be running on my own. Now, I was thinking of doing like a guide to a band. Possibly I was thinking of doing a guide to the Residents or to the Wu-Tang Clan, you know, one of these acts that has been around for a very long time. If anyone's around, Mac and Liberty, I've just seen in the chat, wants to an invite to the Discord. She can have a. What I'll do is I will edit an invite to the Unpopper Academy, and from there you can start your journey towards becoming a fully fledged member of the law, as it were. I think I can still invite people. Yeah, so I'm going to put that in there. So what I'm going to be doing today, instead of that, this is probably not going to be that long a stream, but I wanted to talk about a certain strain of kind of latent or hidden... Okay, so if you just refresh the stream, you should see the Discord in there now. I want to look at a hidden or latent strain of what I would call low-key conservatism or even reactionary thinking within English rock lyrics. Now, when I say conservative, I don't mean liberal, which sounds ridiculous. But what I don't mean is pro-free market or classical liberal thinking. I'm talking about capital small c, maybe capital R style romanticism or small c conservatism. Which is a streak that runs through thinking of people like Roger Scruton, for example. Somebody like Carlyle has a bit of this. Peter Hitchens. There's a very identifiable strain of conservative thinking that you would locate in a book like Russell Kirk's The Conservative Mind. There's that, which I'm going to be getting into. But then alongside that, so I would say that strain coming from Edmund Burke right through Russell Kirk through to Roger Scruton and Peter Hitchens and so on is the acceptable face of British conservatism, which has always had kind of, you know, latent romantic leanings and a certain nostalgia for a certain way of life. But alongside that is a more radical strain of conservatism, I guess you could say, that draws from what you'd call German idealism. And again, that is capital R romantic, but the German idealists were just a bit more extreme. And I mentioned Thomas Carlyle. He was probably one of the foremost British exponents of German idealism. But of course, anybody who knows anything about the history of ideas knows that German idealism fed into the thought of Nietzsche, and then beyond that, certain mid-century Germans and, fascists and so on and so forth. So that's another strain I'll be looking for. Now, I haven't gone out of my way looking for obscure bands here. I wanted to pick bands or acts who are extremely well known. And also, I am not suggesting for a second that any of the people that I'll be looking at on this stream are conservatives or right-wingers, or that they'd vote for the Tory party, or any of these things. In fact, you may find that each of the, and I don't actually care what their actual politics are. So if somebody says, oh, by the way, AA, I think you'll find that Morrissey was a lifelong Labour supporter, or that he's come out in support of Joe Biden or something. It doesn't matter. It doesn't actually matter what the actual politics of these people were, as stated. I'm actually looking for these residual strains of thinking in the lyrics themselves, which may come out in some ways against the grain of what the intentions of the writer were, or they may just be the actual thoughts of the writer, which they won't admit to themselves. So it could be that some of these people are, you know, the closet right wingers or whatever, and they just have never admitted it. I guess what I'm saying is I want to look at the words on the page, not the kind of actual real life politics. Yes, and I'm also not going to be looking at a huge range of acts. I've deliberately selected a small number, and I'm going to be probably spending most of the stream looking at just one band in particular, who I think maybe embody what I'm talking about more than anyone else. Okay. So with all of that said, I'm going to take a sip of my tea, and we'll get started. Now I'm going to flick back. If there's any super chats or anything, I cannot actually see the chat while I'm looking at the lyrics, so I'm going to have to like jump back once in a while to have a look, to see what the chat is saying. I'm not ignoring you. I'm just between different ones. I've just seen Emo Hoppian has come in with King Crimson Ho. So let's have a look at the first act I want to look at, and that is a band that were big in the, well, reasonably big in the 1960s. They were contemporaries of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and the Who, but arguably weren't quite as famous as those three, but they were pretty big in their own right, and I'm sure you've heard of them. And that is the Kinks. I want to start by looking at certain songs by the Kinks. The reason I want to look at the Kinks is because whether Ray Davies, the lead songwriter, intended it or not, clearly he strongly feels some sense of the capital R romantic feelings that I'm talking about. And I just want to kind of get into some examples of this. So the obvious place to start is their album, The Village Green Preservation Society. Now, if we were living in a world without intellectual property laws, I would obviously play these songs and then I talk about them. But given that that would probably get my channel, banned or whatever, I'm just going to read these lyrics and we can analyze them together. But if you want to listen to the song, I guess you'd have to, if you're watching this stream on a replay, you could stop it, go and listen to it, and then come back, But anyway, hopefully you're all familiar with these songs already anyway. So it says, we are the Village Green Preservation Society, God Save Donald Duck, Vaudeville, and Variety. We are the Desperate Dan Appreciation Society, God Save Strawberry Jam and all the different varieties. Preserving the old ways from being abused, protecting the new ways for me and for you. What more can we do? Now, Just looking at this, I'm sure somebody would say, well, clearly AA, this is a little bit tongue in cheek, isn't it? There's satire here, and the kinks are in some strange way making fun of the sort of people who would be in the Village Green Preservation Society. And I've always thought that that may be true to an extent, but I also think there's a degree to which they just straight up mean this, and that even though they're making fun in a fond way, and in a way that would never want to destroy the Village Green Preservation Society. It's a kind of loving, it's a gentle fun, but it's a loving one, and a one which actually feels like kind of warm, glowing and fuzzy feelings towards the Village Green Preservation Society. One of the interesting things about this song is that it recognizes something that T.S. Eliot talked about in his book Notes Towards a Definition of Culture, which is that the stuff of culture is all of these things that people do every day. You know, what is culture but the vaudeville or reading Desperate Dan or having strawberry jam? And all of these things are things that ultimately people hold dear in a society and in a culture. And you don't want these things to be taken away from you. Okay. It carries on. We are the Draft Beer Preservation Society. God save Mrs. Mop and good old Mother Riley. We are the Custard Pie Appreciation Consortium. God save the George Cross and all those who were awarded them. So now these kind of statements in the mid 1960s would have been fairly uncontroversial, I think. But as time has gone on, and as we can see in 2020, when moves are made to destroy these sorts of things that make up a culture that people do genuinely in their heart of hearts love, then the Village Green Preservation Society does have to form, and they carry on. We are the Sherlock Holmes English-speaking vernacular. God save Fu Manchu, Moriarty, and Dracula. We are the Office Boss Persecution Affinity. God save Little Shops, China Cups, and Virginity. We are the Skyscraper Condemnation Affiliates. God save Tudor Houses, Antique Tables, and Billiards. I mean, you can joke, but in a sense, is there anything more true of the basic Roger Scruton view of the world than that couplet there? We are the Skyscraper Condemnation Affiliates. God save Tudor Houses, Antique Tables, and Billiards. So there, I think we can see a very good example of the sort of thing I'm talking about. The kinks, okay, they can dress it up as satire. They can dress it up as a kind of mild poking of fun. But I think there's a very serious level on which they actually mean this, and they meant this in the mid 1960s. You've got to ask, well, why were the kinks bringing out this album? And why were they obsessed with this type of nostalgia? And it's possible that they could feel, and this is, I guess, the difference between the artist and kind of somebody writing nonfiction or a journalist or just a bloke in the pub. An artist is like a conduit for a whole society, for a whole culture that can feel something in its bones. And I think that writing in the mid 60s there as the Kinks were in the I think this album came out in 1968, obviously they could feel something in the ground below them trembling, and they themselves, the Kinks themselves, of course, were part of the great kind of explosion of the counterculture of the 1960s. They were part of the British invasion, you know. They were there, they were singing Louis and all of those other songs they were famous for, all of the day and all of the night. And I think in some ways they could sense the slipping away of that, of the world they had known as children. And they're looking back and they're thinking, what would happen if we actually lost all of these things? And is this a consequence of what is happening here? So Let's move on, because if it was just this one song, you could say, well, it was a one-off. But this is a really strongly enduring theme in the works of the Kinks, especially around this time, the late 1960s. So this is from the same album. This is from Village Green Preservation Society. And it goes like this. Like the last of the good old puffer trains, I'm the last of the Blood and Sweat Brigade, and I don't know where I'm going or why I came. I'm the last of the good old-fashioned steam-powered trains. I'm the last of the good old renegades. All my friends are all middle class and grey, but I live in a museum, so I'm okay. I'm the last of the good old-fashioned steam-powered trains. Like the last of the good old choo-choo trains, huff and puff till I blow this world away, and I keep on rolling till my dying day. I'm the last of the good old-fashioned steam-powered trains. And then it says, I'm the last of the soot and scum brigade, and all this peaceful living is driving me insane. And again, you could say, well, maybe there's a little hint of self-awareness or perhaps even disdain in the line, but I live in a museum. But at the same time, you could say, well, what is this old steam train represent? And what did it represent to the people of the late 1960s? And even today, what does it represent to us now? Every time I put on the TV, there's usually some documentary with Michael Portillo, or sometimes it's Chris Tarrant, or sometimes it's Michael Palin, getting on an old train. And there's something about the old steam-powered trains that evoke a certain nostalgia in people, in a way that... you know, your basic electric train from the late 1980s is not going to evoke nostalgia. I mean, there's something about the steam power train that even evokes a nostalgia with me. And I have, you know, I have lived in a world where we have not had steam power trains at any time. So it's clearly a symbol of some lost past. And specifically, in this case, it is the loss of the world that was brought about by the Industrial Revolution. I mean, nothing embodies the world of the Industrial Revolution more than the steam train. And that, and even in the late 1960s there, as Britain was slowly starting to lose its industrial sector, I think Ray Davies could feel that there was going to be a great changing of the way of life coming about. And now, of course, you know, the people who would have been working in those, industrial jobs with their sooty faces and so on, would now be what he calls middle class and grey. And there's something about the idea in Ray Davies's imagination of being middle class that makes that kind of sucks the life out of everything. There's something less exciting about the homogenized world of the middle class consumer versus this much more vital world of the steam power train, even if that world had great inequalities, which we can look at in some of the other songs that he touches on. And then there's this line here, which is interesting. All this peaceful living is driving me insane. Now, you've got to remember, in 1968, they weren't that far away from the Second World War. You know, it'd been, what, 20 years, basically. But there is the sense that there's something about the sedate consumerist life that is starting to get him down a little bit. And he's yearning for something more vital, less grey, more, you know, more in the world of this old steam-powered train than what it represents. So that's another one. And then on the same album, there's the title track, the Village Green. And I'll just read this. Out in the country, far from all the soot and the noise of the city, there's a village green. It's been a long time since I set eyes on the church with the steeple. Down by the village green, 'twas there I met a girl called Daisy, and kissed her by the old oak tree. Although I love my Daisy, I saw fame, and so I left the village green. I miss the village green and all the simple people. I miss the village green, the church, the clock, the steeple. I miss the morning dew, fresh air and Sunday school. And now all the houses are rare antiques. American tourists flock and see the village green. They snap their photographs and say, "Oh, God damn it, isn't it a pretty scene?" And Daisy's married to the grocer boy, and he now owns a grocery. And then it's the refrain again, and he says, "I will return there, meet Daisy, and we'll sip tea and laugh and talk about the village green. We will laugh and talk about the village green." So again, I think that there's much less of a kind of satirical or mocking tone to this one. Especially if you hear the record, it seems to be much more straight up in the way it's delivered, musically, and the way that Davis sings it. But there are still a couple of like hints of self-aware quaintness, I guess. I mean, why is he using an antiquated twas? I mean, that's a little bit kind of twee, like deliberately twee, I guess you could say. But there's still this sense that the world that he had known when he was younger, the English countryside, and remember the city is the industrial city. It's sooty. It's noisy. It's the world of the old steam powered train, which he's got fondness for that. But he's also got this romantic idea of getting out of the city into the countryside, and he senses it's being lost. He senses it's being eroded by commercialism. He senses it's being eroded by what we'd call American cultural imperialism. Now there are American tourists there. Now it's almost like the village green itself has become like a museum, or like it's something to be looked at, you know, in wonder, rather than the living reality and the living culture of the people, which is what he's ultimately yearning for. And very notably, the church, the clock, Sunday school, this is simple life, but it's something that now in 1968 seems to be, you know, going missing. It seems to be on the way out. Very interesting that the song registers that. We'll have a look at some more Kink. I've got a few more Kink songs I want to look at, and then I'll pause and have a look at the chat, and we'll get on to some other acts after that. Okay. So here's another Kink song. This is a single called Autumn Almanac. And you can see a little bit more of, social commentary creeping in this one. But I still think that the ultimate, no matter what Ray Davis would say, if you ask him about it, the ultimate sentiment and feeling driving these songs is a sense that one day this world will be lost, and that would be a shame, and that the passing of that is something too difficult or terrible to contemplate. I do think nostalgia is the key tone to so many of these songs. So Autumn Almanac goes, "From the dew-soaked hedge creeps a crawly caterpillar. When the dawn begins to crack, it's all part of my autumn almanac. Breeze blows leaves of a musty-coloured yellow, so I sweep in my sack, yes, yes, yes. My autumn almanac. Friday evenings, people get together, hiding from the weather, tea and toasted. Buttered currant buns can't compensate for lack of sun because all the summer's gone. La, 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 oh my poor rheumatic back. Yes, 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 it's my autumn almanac. I like my football on a Saturday. Roast beef on Sundays, all right. I go to Blackpool for my holidays. Sit in the open sunlight. This is my street and I'm never going to leave it. And I'm always going to stay here if I live to be 99. Because all the people I meet seem to come from my street. And I can't get away because it's calling me. Come on home. I hear it calling me. Come on home." Now, in the kind of bankrupt liberal imagination, this is a song about being trapped. This is a song about a lack of social mobility. This is a song about you know, the poor and the destitute working man stuck in, you know, this is the this is Marx's opiate of the masses. You know, what a small world he's got, eating roast beef on Sundays, going to watch the football, Blackpool for the holidays. You can tell he's a working man because he's got a, you know, a bad back from a life of toil. You know, this is just what a small life this is. Don't you want to get away from all of this? I can imagine some, you know, new Labour politician automatically thinking all of these things if they were to hear these lyrics. But I don't think that this song is getting at that at all. I think it's working in completely the opposite direction. It is actually it's a celebration of this. It's an elegy to this as a living reality for you know, working people at this time. This is not something, you know, this is my street and I'm never going to leave it. I'm always going to stay here if I live to be 99, because all the people I meet seem to come from my street. This is not a tragedy in the way that the New Labour mindset would have you believe. This is actually a feeling of belonging to a community that is bigger than yourself, and a community that specifically is calling you to come on home. This is, you know, this is the home. This is something that should be warm. This is positive. The fact that it doesn't change and the fact that there's no real mobility here is neither here nor there, because the song's essential feeling, I guess, is communal. It's communitarian, not individualistic or thinking in terms of in material terms. It's kind of reveling in these things in and of itself. You know, that it's no tragedy that you have the roast beef on Sunday. It taps into a strong domestic English tradition of what it is. Even the incidental features like the toasted buttered currant buns, you know, it kind of speaks to that T.S. Eliot England that I was talking about earlier on. So again, I don't think this is such an enduring theme in the work of the Kinks that I don't think that it can be hand waved away as all kind of it's just social comment, it's just satire. It seems like the overriding feelings, which are fundamentally conservative feelings, seem to flood out all of the more cynical or left-wing takes that you could have of these songs. So let's have a look at a few more of these. This is one I threw in because this taps into something I quite like, which is the fundamental inequality of human beings, and the very fact of hierarchy, even within a school setting. So he says, far, 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 far. I am a dull and simple lad, cannot tell water from champagne, and I've never met the Queen, and I wish I could have all he has got. I wish I could be like David Watts. When I lie on my pillow at night, I dream I could fight like David Watts. I'd lead the school team to victory, take my exams and pass the lot. I wish I could be like David Watts. He is the head boy at the school. He is the captain of the team. He is so gay and fancy free. I wish all his money belonged to me. I wish I could be like David Watts. And all the girls in the neighborhood try to go out with David Watts, try their best, but they cannot succeed. For he is of pure and noble breed. I wish I could be like David Watts. Now, I don't know about your school, but my feeling is that every school and every class in every year group, I guess you could say, in every school that has ever been, has got a recognizable David Watts. You could probably have a game trying to name who the David Watts was in your year group. I'm sure there was one who, you know, was the captain of the school team. All the girls fancied him. You know, he seemed to do well in all his exams and everything. What I like about this song, and what I think it's trying to get at, is that there is a kind of fundamental inequality and hierarchy in life. which is recognizable and you can't do anything about it. It doesn't really matter where you're from. There's going to be a David Watts character there, and it can be annoying. You know, David Watts is, you know, it can be kind of frustrating that you are not David Watts type thing. But it's a kind of, you know, there's a truth to this song, and this is why I've picked it out here. And you know, he's being pretty honest. You know, he wishes he could be like David Watts. And then there's the next album I'm going to get to, which is it's called Arthur, or The Decline and Fall of the British Empire, where all of these themes that were on Village Green now get kind of zoomed out a bit, and they take on a kind of national or even empire level vision. This is Victoria, famous song, pretty anthemic. And I'll just read the lyrics again. Long ago, life was clean, sex was bad, called obscene, and the rich were so mean, stately homes for the lords, croquet lawns, village greens. Victoria was my queen, Victoria. I was born, lucky me, in that land that I love. Though I am poor, I am free. When I grow, I shall fight for this land, I shall die. Let her sun never set, Victoria, Victoria. Land of hope and Gloria, land of my Victoria. Canada to India, Australia to Cornwall, Singapore to Hong Kong, from west to east, from rich to the poor, Victoria loved them all. So you could say, well, you know, there's some inbuilt recognition of the inequality of the Victorians. There's a recognition that, you know, that the empire may not have been the greatest thing in the world. But I think there's, again, this recognition in the late 60s that this world, the world of Victoria, the world of the croquet lawns, of the stately lords, of the morals, when sex was bad and called obscene, was all long ago. It's being lost. The memory of it is fading. And the next generation of people who come after bands like the Beatles and the Kinks and so on aren't going to remember any vestige of this world, where the sun never set, and there was an order and a structure and a moral sense where where people hailed Victoria as the queen. So I think you can see where I'm going with the Kinks. Finally, perhaps one of the more complicated songs is this one, also on Arthur. And it's Shangri-La. And I think, given all what we've seen so far, all of these songs which seem to be lamenting or gently elegizing the passing of this old way of life, a way of life for which it's obvious that Ray Davies and the rest of the Kinks have genuine fondness and love. They wouldn't spend all this time cataloguing all of these things if they didn't feel genuine affection for them. And what is taking the place? What is coming? We had a hint of it in that steam-powered train song with the middle class and the grey. What is coming to take its place? And this song, Shangri-La, I think, seems to get at the world that is coming to replace the world of the Village Green. He says, now that you've found your paradise, this is your kingdom to command. You can go outside and polish your car or sit by the fire in your Shangri-La. Here's your reward for working so hard. Gone are the lavatories in the backyard. Gone all the days when you dreamed of that car. You just want to sit in your Shangri-La. Put on your slippers and sit by the fire. You've reached your top and you just can't get any higher. You're in your place and you know where you are in your Shangri-La. Sit back in your old rocking chair. You need not worry. You need not care. You can't go anywhere, Shangri-La. The little man who gets the train has a mortgage hanging over his head, but he's too scared to complain because he's conditioned that way. Time goes by and he pays off his debts. Got a TV set and a radio for 7 shillings a week, Shangri-La. All the houses on the street have got a name because all the houses in the street, they look the same. Same chimney pots, same little car, same window panes. The neighbors call to tell you things that you should know. They say their lines, they drink their tea, and then they go. They tell you their business in another Shangri-La, the gas bills and the water rates and the payments on the car. Too scared to think about how insecure you are. Life ain't so happy in your little Shangri-La. Shangri-La. Put on your slippers and sit by the fire. You've lived your you've reached your top and you can't get any higher, etc. So what I think is interesting about this song is that the basic vision of the Shangri-La is in some way the life that is being sold to you by what these days you'd call neoliberalism, or in fact it's even the just plain old liberalism. It is this vision that you've paid enough for your own little space and you've got your TV and you're happy in that little atomized bubble, you know, far away from everyone else. You don't have to worry, even though you've got bills to pay and so on, and there's some insecurity and anxiety about whether you're going to be able to do all those things. Nonetheless, as long as you're in that little cocoon, you don't have to worry about anything else. And I think that it's obvious that Davis and the Kinks are somewhat cynical about this vision of life. I don't see the fondness for this vision of life that was there for the Village Green or the roast beef and the street where everybody lived and knew their place in a sense. In fact, if Carlyle was looking at this, he'd be saying, well, yes, because the problem with the people who are living this existence with a mortgage hanging over their head and they're too scared to complain because they've got to keep on making those payments, is that these people are living a life of what he would call nomadism. You know, they're trapped in a way, and they have to make do with these pale substitutes for kind of genuine fulfillment, which is simply, you know, just go and watch your TV, basically. Forget about it. Sit in your rocking chair and dwell in your you know, the little kingdom that you've managed to get for yourself. So I do think that there's a very serious and obvious conservative critique of liberalism coming through in this song, and he does actually develop it. There's an album called Muswell Hillbillies, in which these themes are developed even further, but I won't go into them here because we've been going a bit longer than I had anticipated here. So I will just have a look at what the chat is saying here, and I will then get on to the next act I want to look at, which is the Smiths, another great English rock band. So I just get open my super chat tab a second, and I will also look at the normal chat. I know people say I'm too elitist and snobby to look at the normal chat, but given that I don't have the warblings of other people on this, now this is a nice cozy little solo stream, I can look at the normal chat as well. In fact, I'll do that first and then I'll look at the super chats. So let's have a look. I can see Crispy is listening to Shangri-La. Yeah, I mean, seriously, the Kinks are an amazing band, really amazing band. Somebody's calling this boomer slam poetry recital. Indeed, The Decline of the British Empire is a conceptual album, follows Arthur on his journey through life. Absolutely. And the thing is that the Kinks always try to, or Ray Davis always tries to be clever or distance himself, but I actually think that the themes are so enduring in general in their work that in the end it's not irony. It is just straight up, it's just meant, you know, it's meant as it sounds in a way. People are saying Shangri-La is probably the Kinks' best song. David Watts is the original Chad, says Tom Adler. Hilarious. Somebody saying he's no Milton. and there we go. I don't hate King Crimson. I don't hate them, Emo Hoppy, and I just I'm not big on prog. I think there's something in prog rock. There's something about it that's I don't know. It seems indulgent. I'll just put it that way. It seems to revel in the worst sort of individualism, I think. So yes. Louis was by the Kingsmen, but the Kinks had a cover of it. I was trying to think of the much more famous song All of the Day and All of the Night, and you know, they had a whole suite of early songs where it was just like three chord riffs and things like that. Animal Farms, and here we go. Okay, let me get on to the super chats then, and we'll carry on. People are ranking their favorite Kinks albums now. I would say that the Kinks have an extremely hot streak, probably starting with Face to Face or something, definitely Something Else by the Kinks, and then basically they can do no wrong until you get to pretty much Lola, and then they just fall off a cliff in the mid 70s. That said, I quite like the title track of Schoolboys in Disgrace. I think that's an underrated song in general, Schoolboys in Disgrace. But unfortunately, they start doing like these rock operas and things, and it's all a bit cringy after a while. So Muswell Hillbillies is a fantastic album. All of those Arthur, Village Green, Muswell Hillbillies, Something Else, and Lola, I would say are all like stone cold classic five-star albums, I would in my view. I will have a look at the super chats. So I did Hoppy and King Crimson. A Border Prince says Led Zeppelin songs about Achilles and Lord of the Rings and so on. Yeah, there are some interesting strains in Led Zeppelin. They're all a bit allegorical, I thought, for me to go on this stream. But there's some good stuff. I mean, there's also some I like songs like Gallows Pole. You know, it kind of gets to like a kind of almost more extreme, old fashioned kind of more vicious culture. Novelty Cross says an option conflict British anarcho punk band. BB says thanks academic agent, please recommend three books on the decline of Western civilization written between 1940 and 2010. Oh gosh, well how long do you have? Written between 1940 and 2010, that's very specific. There's one by Jim Nelson Black called When Nations Die that I would recommend having a look at. There's a book by Kerry Bolton called The Decline and Fall of Civilizations. It's called The Decline and Fall. Yeah, Decline and Fall of Civilizations. Now, I will give you a prior warning. Kerry Bolton is a bit of an edgy boy in and of himself. But that book is quite interesting because it looks at, it goes civilization by civilization to look at the causes of the decline in much the manner that John Bagot Glubb's The Fate of Empires does, but in a more sustained way. So that's an interesting book to pick up. Pat Buchanan has got a book on that as well. I think it's just called like The Suicide of the West, as far as I can remember, by Pat Buchanan. So is that three? That should be three. If the Kerry Bolton one was published after 2010, I'd probably say then No. Was Evela's Men Among the Ruins after that? I don't know. Actually, James Burnham's Suicide of the West is well worth a read as well. I mean, they're not about the inevitable collapse of civilization, any of these books, but they're generally talking of a downward trajectory if something isn't done soon, you know. I mean, I always mention Abolition of Britain as well by Hitchens. I mean, it's just, I assume everybody's read that at this point, but that's another terrific book on that general theme. Chris O'Neill has just sent me $20 with a icon of some sort. Don't know what it is, that icon. Can't really see it. Is it just a? I think it's just a £20 note, but thank you for that. And Jedi Knight Anakin Cringewalker says, "The mystery of chess boxing predicted 2020." Did it? How did the mystery of chess boxing? I don't see how it. Which bit are you talking about? I mean, all I can remember from that song is "Rule, I'ma give it to you" with no trivia, or like cocaine straight from Bolivia. So you'll have to explain what you mean. Or do you mean the bit at the start? You know, the game of chess is like a sword fight. You must first think. You must think first before you move. Toad style is immensely strong and immune to nearly any weapon. When it's used properly, it's almost invincible. Is that what you're talking about? I don't know. Okay, let's move on now to the Smiths. That was all of the super chats. Forza Jersey has come in with a late one saying, "Great video. What about living on a thin line?" Living on a thin line. Which song is that? Then I don't not ringing a bell off the top of my. Oh, that's a Kinks song as well. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is about the Kinks, they've got tons of these songs. That one's from Word of Mouth, looking it up, and I remember it now. I haven't actually listened to Word of Mouth more than like once when I was just kind of going over, you know, late Kinks to see if I was missing out on anything, but that is a pretty good shout actually. Living on a Thin Line and you can see how that theme basically carries on into the Kinks. I would say after the early 70s the Kinks still do have good songs, but it's like down to like two or three every album rather than the entire album being great, if that makes any sense. So I also like the from their later stuff. There's a song called Celluloid Heroes about like going over the Hollywood stars and thinking how tragic all their lives were and things. That's a really good song as well. So anyway, let's move on now to the Smiths. Now the Smiths, I will say, do not have this strain as strongly as the Kinks, but it seems to me it's still there somewhere. And this is going to sound a bit strange, but you can kind of just hear it in the Morrissey's voice and demeanor more than anything else. It comes out in the style of the Smiths. There's something I think Morrissey would understand everything we've been talking about so far. Let's put it that way. So I've just picked out a few of their songs. Like I say, all of the Smiths has a certain vibe about it, where it does seem to be slightly lamenting the modern world and wishing that we could, you know, in some ways go back to some other time. But I picked out this charming man. Punctured bicycle on a hillside desolate, will nature make a man of me yet? When in this charming car, this charming man? Why pamper life's complexity when the lever runs smooth on the passenger seat? I would go out tonight, but I haven't got a stitch to wear. This man said it's gruesome. that someone so handsome should care. Ah, a jumped up pantry boy who never knew his place. He said, return the ring. He knows so much about these things. I would go out tonight, but I haven't got a stitch to wear. This man said it's gruesome that someone so handsome should care. Jumped up pantry boy. Now, that line, a jumped up pantry boy who never knew his place, is from the Anthony Hamilton. Anthony Schaefer play Sleuth, that was later made into a film starring Laurence Olivier and Michael Caine. And that line, jumped up pantry boy who never knew his place, is in Sleuth. And it's interesting because it's the speaker of that line is this kind of 1930s detective writer who really laments the swinging 60s of the kind of Michael Caine character, who's this Italian immigrant who's opened up a barbershop in Soho. And the older character, the detective writer, has got genuine disdain for the Michael Caine character. And I think there's something in, why has Morrissey inserted that line into this song? What is he trying to get at all with this? Another one I've picked out from the Smiths is Death of a Disco Dancer, which is from their last album, which is called Strange Ways Here We Come. It goes, the death of a disco dancer, well, it happens a lot around here. If you think peace is a common goal, that goes to show how little you know. The death of a disco dancer, well, I'd rather not get involved. I never speak to my neighbor, I'd rather not get involved. Love, peace, and harmony. Love, peace, and harmony. Oh, very nice, very nice, very nice. But maybe in the next world. I don't think I need to. It kind of speaks for itself in a way. But I think there's an obviously anti-utopian element to this song. He's more or less saying that love, peace, and harmony is not viable. He's recognizing the fact that he himself has become a kind of somewhat atomized individual who'd rather not get involved in talking to his neighbor. Something I think I can certainly relate to that. I'd rather not get involved either. So I just think that there are these residual recognitions in Morrissey that is aware of the fact that the goals of the left wing are just unachievable and utopian. I think there's a strong streak in the Smiths of, I guess, what you'd call the disappointed romantic, but the romantic who's disappointed not only in the world around him, but also in a way in himself. He's disappointed by his own cynicism. He would want to be, like, in an ideal world, he would want to be someone who'd speak to his neighbor. But in the kind of fallen reality that we live in today, he'd just rather not get involved. And he's actually quite happy with that. In his lived reality, he's happy with that kind of cynicism. But deep down, he's not happy with that cynicism. Much like myself. I will look at Still Ill. This is another one by the Smiths. I decree today that life is simply taking and not giving. England is mine, and it owes me a living. Ask me why, and I'll spit in your eye. Ask me why, I'll spit in your eye. But we cannot cling to those old dreams anymore. No, we cannot cling to those dreams. Does the body rule the mind? Does the mind rule the body? I don't know. Under the Iron Bridge we kissed, and although I ended up with sore lips, it just wasn't like the old days anymore. No, it wasn't like those old days. Am I still ill? Oh, I am still ill. And then it goes on. Now, again, there's a kind of elliptical and enigmatic quality to the way that Morrissey writes, and a certain whimsical, there's a certain whimsy to the changes in the apparent sudden shifts in what he's talking about from line to line. But I think that you can, there are all sorts of weird things registered here. These first two lines are clearly some sort of pastiche of somewhat, you can imagine like some old union boss maybe saying, life is simply taking and not giving. England is mine, it owes me a living. But maybe this is also the speaker, Morrissey is the writer here, saying that himself, that he is, he's just making that declaration, even as he recognizes this is in some sense not true. He's decreeing it, but that doesn't make it true. And hence he cannot actually justify it. Ask me why, I'll spit in your eye. Just know, I've decreed it, and that's it, basically. Which in four lines shows, I guess, you the fundamental childishness of socialism in one quatrain right there. Whether he intended it or not, who cares? I think it kind of shows that. But then it just shifts. We cannot cling to the old dreams anymore. We cannot cling to those dreams. And if you listen to this song, there is that strange kind of nostalgia or knowing that something is passing, that he gets across, that he gets across in the vocal. And then he asks the question, does the body rule the mind, or does the mind rule the body? And in some way, without just trying to sound too wanky about this, this is the fundamental question posed by the German idealists. The German idealists say it's the mind that rules the body. The materialists say the opposite. Morrissey says he doesn't know. But one suspects that he's on the idealist side of these things, not on the materialist side. All right, I'll just see what the chat is saying, and we'll move on to the next act I've got lined up, which is David Bowie. Someone is saying, isn't Morrissey cancelled now? And yes, he shared a video by Morgoth's Review, among other things. He came out as a Brexit supporter, and he's kind of against PC culture. So he's officially been cancelled by the Guardian Easters and so on. So there we go. Now let's go to Bowie, and now he is, of all the people that I could pick for this, you'd think David Bowie, he's not conservative in any way, is he? He's the person responsible for opening up sexuality. He's the person responsible for prancing around in a dress in the early 70s. Gay icon, you could say. How on earth is this somebody who has conservative strains in his lyrics? But of course, I am referring to the strange period in the mid to late 70s, where Bowie dabbled with he says he was on coke and living on like a chili a day and a glass of milk or whatever it was. But he dabbled with far right politics at one point. But I would argue that this kind of fascination with fascism in Bowie's works actually extend beyond that period, and were in some ways always there. If you consider the figure of Ziggy Stardust, for example, as a metaphor. And even before that, if you think in Hunky Dory and in the previous album, the Man Who Fell to Earth, sorry, not the man who fell to earth, the man who sold the world, there is this interest. You see where I'm going with this? There is an interest, to put it in Carlylean terms, with heroes and hero worship in the works of Bowie. There is an interest also in the figure of the idol. Now, in the Ziggy Stardust material, obviously that idol is a rock star, but I think there's an awareness that there's not a million miles away, there's not a million miles between the rock idol or the rock star and the demagogue, the political demagogue, the leader, the Caesar figure. You know, you could say the Hitler or the Mussolini, you know, or even these days you'd say the Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump does his, just as the rock star fills out the massive stadium and has adoring, cheering fans chanting their name, you know, and the rock star experiences euphoria that washes over him as a wave. So too, or so I'm told, is the experience at the Trump rally. And you can see, you can watch, Trump is not the same person when he's just giving a speech in front of a teleprompter or when he's addressing the press to when he's in that stadium at the rally with all of his base there, his support there. And you can almost see him at times drawing the euphoria and the energy from the crowd and then giving it back to them in this strange dialectic between the demagogue and the, you know, and the plebeian crowd, you know, the mob, you want to put it that way, in those terms. And I think Bowie's always been fascinated with that very idea. And you can see it in this song, Rock and Roll Suicide, the final track on Ziggy Stardust. I'll just read some of the lyrics here. Time takes a cigarette, puts it in your mouth, you pull on the finger, then another finger, then cigarette. The wall to wall is calling. It lingers, then you forget. Oh, you're a rock and roll suicide. You're too old to lose it. You're too young to choose it. And the clock waits so patiently on your song. You walk past the cafe and you don't eat when you've lived too long. No, no, you're a rock and roll suicide. Chef breaks a snarling as you stumble across the road. But the day breaks instead, so you hurry home. Don't let the sun blast your shadow. Don't let the milk float ride your mind. You're so natural, religiously unkind. Oh no, love, you're not alone. You're watching yourself, but you're too unfair. You got your head all tangled up, but if only if I could only make you care. Oh no, love, you're not alone. No matter what or who you've been, no matter where or when you've seen, all the knives seem to lacerate your brain. I've had my share. I'll help you with the pain. You're not alone. You just turn on with me and you're not alone. Let's turn on and be not alone. Give me your hands because you're wonderful. Give me your hands. Oh, give me your hands. And there is, I think, the rush of the, I guess, the fundamental fascistic impulse here between the guy, the icon on the stage reaching his hands out and all of the thousands, the millions of hands reaching up, and they're becoming as one. This is a kind of Jonathan Haidt would call it the hive switch, the becoming part of something bigger than yourself as being channeled by a central hero figure. And this is an idea I think that Bowie was exploring in this song. And if you read the Carlyle book on heroes and hero worship, he talks about all of these different figures who are able in some ways to do this. You know, all of the people giving their hands to them, the hero figure channeling what's in the ether and kind of reflecting it back out, and then being able to mold and shape his reality almost like a kind of transmuter or mage figure. You know, this is the way he talks about Napoleon, for example, or Odin, or even Muhammad. He talks about in these sorts of terms. And it's this kind of strange dual way thing. Kind of an interesting concept, and it's pretty obvious now that I'm talking in these terms that Bowie was exploring this idea for a very long time. This is quite a world away from the world of the village green, the communitarian kind of vision that the Kinks were into. This is much more the kind of hard German, you know, the German idealism taken to its extreme. This is the Nietzschean, I guess, side of it here, and I think the Nietzschean strain is pretty strong in Bowie. I will have a look at another song now. This is the title track of Station to Station, where he was playing a character called the Thin White Duke, who was the Thin White Duke was meant to be openly a kind of fascist or neo-fascist, and I guess goes like this: the return of the Thin White Duke, throwing darts in lovers' eyes. Here are we, one magical moment, such as the stuff from where dreams are woven, bending sound, dredging the ocean, lost in my circle. Here am I, flashing no colour, tall in this room, overlooking the ocean. Here are we, one magical moment, from Kether to Mulcath. There are you. You drive like a demon from station to station. The return of the Thin White Duke, throwing darts in lovers' eyes. This is the return of the Thin White Duke, making sure white stays. Once there were mountains on mountains, and once there were sunbirds to soar with, and once I could never be down. Gotta keep searching and searching. Oh, what will I be believing, and who will connect me with love? Wonderful, wonderful, wonder when. Have you sought fortune, evasive and shy? Drink to the men who protect you, and I. Drink, drink, drink your glass, raise your glass high. It's not the side effect of the cocaine. I'm thinking that it must be love. It's too late to be grateful. It's too late to be late again. It's too late to be hateful. The European canon is here. I must be the only one in a million. I won't let the day pass without her. It's too late to be grateful. It's too late to be late again. It's too late to be hateful. The European canon is here. So, I mean, I won't dwell on this, but you can see that there's something in this song that is now openly and aware of this fascistic impulse that he was exploring in the Ziggy Stardust stuff, and now it's just kind of out in the open. He's basically like cosplaying as this Thin White Duke character, but beneath it all is a recognition that there's a searching for something that is leading him to this. It's a searching when he says, "Who will connect me with love?" You know, what is it that he can be a part of that will make him feel something? Drink to the men who protect you and I. Raise your glass high. And then there are the the slightly more dubious lines about making sure white stays, and you know, the European canon is here. Interesting song. And Bowie, of course, not afraid to play with ambiguity, just to leave things latent and unstated. You can kind of read what you want to in some of these lines. But it's kind of interesting nonetheless, especially in the light of, if you think of Ziggy Stardust and Aladdin Sane as, you know, meditations on this general idea of the subjective reality, the German idealist vision, the Nietzschean vision of the world. This is a kind of logical next step. And then there is, of course, Heroes on the, famously this was, written under the Berlin Wall. And again, this anthem doesn't come off as some like anti-communist thing, or liberal propaganda in any way. Let's just read what he says. I will be king. You will be queen. Nothing will drive them away. We can beat them just for one day. We can be heroes. And you can be mean. I'll drink all the time because we're lovers and that is a fact. I wish you could swim like dolphins can swim, etc. I'm sure you're all very familiar with this song. I can remember standing by the wall, the guns shot above our heads, and we kissed as though nothing could fall. And again, this is, I mean, if you remember the strain I was picking up in the Smiths, you know, does the body rule the mind or does the mind rule the body? This again is this idealist notion of the subjective experience of the people themselves, of the individual, overcoming the material reality. So, you know, he's literally standing, but, you know, these lovers are literally underneath the Berlin Wall, the cold, mechanistic materialism, I guess you could say, of communism and of East Germany on one side. But you could also say, yes, but it's the cold, materialistic West Germany, the liberal West Germany on the left side, which doesn't get celebrated in this song. It's not like he's saying, it's the whole situation that is materialistic, right? It's the whole thing. And the thing that is overcoming, the thing that is heroic, the heroic will here is the will of the two people that overcomes and changes the reality. And that is the way around to think about this, which is why I'm calling this a kind of German idealist song, ultimately, in that same heroic way that Carlyle talks about in his book on heroes. So yeah, I think it's you know, this is one I'm not saying all of these are definitive readings of these songs, but this is certainly a way that you could look at a song like Heroes. Now this next song here, China Girl, was actually written by Iggy Pop. It's a cover of Iggy Pop, who of course is American, but Bowie was the producer on the original track, and then later on he covered it for his Let's Dance album. Everybody said, oh, you know, Bowie is sold out in the early 80s. But it's got pretty interesting lyrics. Shall I just read them? Oh, little China girl, I could escape this feeling with my little China girl. I feel a wreck without my little China girl. I hear her heart beating loud as thunder, saw the stars crashing. I'm a mess without my little China girl. Wake up mornings, where's my China girl? Hear her heart beating loud as thunder. Saw the stars crashing down. I feel tragic like I'm Marlon Brando. When I look at my China girl, I can pretend there's nothing really meant too much. When I look at my China girl, I stumble into town just like a sacred cow. Visions of swastikas in my head, plans for everyone. It's in the whites of my eyes. My little China girl, you shouldn't mess with me. I'll ruin everything you are. You know, I'll give you television. I'll give you eyes of blue. I give you men who wants to rule the world. And when I get excited, my little China girl says, baby, just you shut your mouth. So, again, it's kind of, you know, ostensibly this is like a love song to this, you know, girl he's met. This girl he has met in China. But there is a very different way that you could read this song. I mean, the speaker of this song, as he starts wandering through his own mind, like all of a sudden becomes literally a Nazi in the middle of this song. You know, visions of swastikas in my head. He's now looking at all of the land that he surveys and seeing it in the eyes of a conqueror or as a kind of imperialist. It's just kind of interesting that Iggy Pop, when he was writing this song, you know, that his mind went there. Why does it go there? And then it starts to open up, like, well, what is this song even trying to get at? And possibly, I mean, who knows? I'm just thinking out loud here. It could be some sort of allegory for the way that Western values, Western liberalism, kind of invades other cultures, takes the, you know, I'll give you television, I'll give you eyes of blue. I'll ruin everything you are. So once a culture like China, for example, or it doesn't really matter what the country is, starts to accept this way of looking at the world, I'm talking about the liberal way of looking at the world, then it starts to ruin the vestiges of what their own culture were, and it starts with television. But then it's all kind of mixed in with this strange fascistic imagery as well. And then finally, from the Scary Monsters album, I picked out this song, Up the Hill Backwards. I don't have too much. I mean, this has got a very catchy tune if you're not familiar with it. But it says, the vacuum created by the arrival of freedom and the possibilities it seems to offer, it's got nothing to do with you if one can grasp it. A series of shocks and sneakers fall apart. Earth keeps on rolling. Witness is falling. It's got nothing to do with you if one can grasp it. Yeah, up the hill backwards. While we sleep, they go to work. We're legally crippled. It's the death of love. It's got nothing to do with you if one can grasp it. More idols than realities. Oh, I'm okay. You're so-so. And I one reason I picked up this song was just this one line here. The vacuum created by the arrival of freedom. It's just a very interesting line to pause on, especially now that Bowie is writing this song in 1980. He's explored all of these, I guess you could say, German idealist ideas all through his much lauded 70s albums. It's a constant theme in his work. And this song just starts bang, you know, the vacuum created by the arrival of freedom and the possibilities it seems to offer. That, so there's I wonder if there's a tacit recognition here that it's not, you know, what is being touted as freedom, what is being sold as liberation all around the world, let's say by the globo homo, if you want to put it that way, is necessarily all it's cracked up to be. Is it really something that is giving you these endless possibilities, or is it something much more constraining? Do people actually want it? So yes, I thought I'd pick that one out. So let's see what the chat is saying. Is Academic Agent talking a load of old rubbish, or is there something? Is there something in all of this? Somebody saying China Girl is actually about heroin. Yeah, probably. You know, most Iggy Pop songs are ultimately about heroin. So somebody saying that somebody was claiming yesterday that Bowie's not really dead. I'm only going to look at one Sex Pistols song. I'm about to wrap up this stream, but Carter H says, sent you that NEH guide AA. England lives, I hope. Yes, I will. On next week's Unpopular Opinions, I'll have a look through that guide. I think that will be something to look forward to. Spurg 83 has joined the third tier biscuit. Thank you very much. Appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. Join the Turley Talkers. JS has just joined the stream now. You're gonna, having met JS in real life, you're gonna want to catch this one, because I look through Kinks, Smiths, and Bowie lyrics for conservative kind of strains, romantic strains. So I think you should go back and watch it from the start, JS, because I think it'll be right up your street. So the last one I'm going to look at are the Sex Pistols. Now, on the face of it, this seems absurd, right? How is this punk band who are known for songs like Anarchy in the UK and God Save the Queen, which literally starts God Save the Queen, the fascist regime. How is the Sex Pistols possibly a conservative band in any single way? And, let me just read you the lyrics to this song. She was a girl from Birmingham, She just had an abortion. She was a case of insanity. Her name was Pauline. She lived in a tree. She was a no one who killed her baby. She sent her letters from the country. She was an animal. She was a bloody disgrace. Body. I'm not an animal. Body. I'm not an animal. Dragged on a table in a factory. Illegitimate place to be. In a packet in a lavatory. Die a little baby screaming. Body screaming. Fucking bloody mess. Not an animal. It's an abortion. Body. I'm not an animal. Mummy. I'm not an abortion. Throbbing squirm. Gurgling bloody mess. I'm not a discharge. I'm not a loss in protein. I'm not a throbbing squirm. And then this will get demonetized if I read all of that. I don't want a baby that looks like that. Body, I'm not an animal. Body, an abortion. I don't know if I need to tease out the conservative elements in this Sex Pistols song, but I would say that it's pretty obvious why at least Johnny Rotten out of the Sex Pistols there I don't think that song was in any way left wing. I cannot see a reading of that kind of makes it satirical or tries to invert it in any way. I actually think that I think it's pretty obvious. All right, I hope people enjoyed. I'm gonna wrap this up now. I hope people enjoyed this stream. People are saying, what about Pulp? What about Blur? I could do this all day long. We could do 100 streams like this, looking through the lyrics of various pop acts. And I think that maybe once in a while, as a filler stream, I can do these. All right. Thank you very much, everyone. Hope your afternoon tea is finished. I'll see you tomorrow night for the cigar stream. Get out, everyone.